We still can't quite agree on the proper pronunciation of Omicron, but it doesn't matter. The Omicron variant of COVID-19 appears to have no trouble getting to know us. Numbers in the region continue to zoom, with Oregon hitting seven-day averages of new cases well more than double the single-day records from back in the Delta wave. Dr. Leona O'Keefe is Medical Director at Jackson County Health and Human Services, joining us once again to take our COVID questions. Dr. O'Keefe, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you. When I sat down to write questions yesterday, we were still waiting for the Monday numbers to come in. And as of Friday, they were still at record new cases for the state, record new cases for Jackson County. And once the Monday numbers came in, certainly no improvement there. What's your assessment of the current situation?
Yeah, I agree. I think for our state as a whole, perhaps we're reaching somewhat of a plateau. But I think we have to keep in mind that, unlike Delta, Omicron seems to be affecting Northern Oregon first, where there's a greater population. And so the statewide numbers won't necessarily reflect what's happening here in Southern Oregon. And here in Jackson County, those numbers continue to stay high. So I'm not sure that we've hit our peak yet here.
And what is the situation with hospitalizations? I just pulled up the state information here. It looks like we still have nothing seems to change with ICU beds. You know, somewhere in the low 50s of beds occupied, and usually, you know, anywhere between 2 to 6 beds available. There are 6 available at the moment, I see, in Region 5, which is Jackson, Josephine counties.
Yeah, so unfortunately, just in the last week, the hospital numbers really shot up. They've been gradually rising over the last month or two, but this last week they really overall went quite high in our region, which is Josephine and Jackson counties. As you pointed out, those who are in the ICU and on ventilators has not risen to this point. And that could be, I think, one of a couple of things. One is those who get really, really sick tend to lag behind the hospitalization numbers, so perhaps it's still coming. But in general, we are hearing that Omicron lands fewer people in the ICU and on ventilators. And so I think we're hopeful that for our region, we won't see the ICU become overwhelmed with COVID patients, and that instead they will not be getting that ill.
To that point, though, I mean, because this is where I think there gets to be some, I don't know if I'd call it confusion or relief or something, but the idea that because Omicron doesn't seem to be quite as intense, that people need not fear it as much. There's another side to that story, though.
Yeah, you know, we still are seeing that in those who are unvaccinated, Omicron can be quite severe. And so really, part of why Omicron may seem to be less severe may not be Omicron itself, but that more and more of our population are having exposures to the virus, whether it's through infection or through vaccines. And so that might be tamping down how severely people respond to Omicron if they contract it. Whereas at the same time, if someone has not been exposed to any version of the virus previously, they are still quite at risk for severe disease. And we are seeing that.
The idea,
so, go ahead. We don't recommend you go out and have an Omicron party. You could still end up quite sick and even dying. And of course, if you don't die, which is great, there's still a risk for long COVID, which can last quite a long time and really change people's lives.
Do we even know? I mean, at this point, simply because we're still, what, just at about the two-year mark here, do we even know how long COVID can go on?
Great question. And we don't. We still have people who are experiencing those long COVID symptoms and are not able to work or even do the things around the house that they would normally do. And whether it's, so-called brain fog, where you just can't think as clearly as you usually would, or extreme fatigue or clots happening over and over again, those are serious things. And sadly, some people are still experiencing those. We do know that vaccination, either before the exposure to the virus or even within 60 days after contracting the virus, getting the vaccine really helps to minimize or even prevent long COVID.
Dr. Leona O'Keefe, our guest once again on the Jefferson Exchange, Jackson County's medical director, joining us weekly for COVID Q&A. And you can do your Q at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Randy and Roosh emailed a timely question. He says, lately when talking to conservative friends about COVID, the subject has come around to monoclonal antibodies and why they're not being used more for the treatment of COVID. Can the doctor please comment on this? And then I'll footnote that with the fact that there's been recent decisions about some of these processes.
Yeah, great point. So we did have good access to monoclonal antibodies up until Omicron hit. And unfortunately, two out of the three types of monoclonal antibody treatments available in the U.S. were shown to not be effective against Omicron. And so once Omicron became the dominant variant in our area, we really had to stop using the monoclonal antibodies that we had available to us. The third one that is shown to be effective against Omicron, as you can imagine, is in short supply and high demand. And unfortunately, it is coming into our state rather erratically and in far too supply. So it is in our region, but in very, very limited supply. And so we are in communication with our medical providers on how to prioritize who would receive that particular monoclonal antibody, which is called Sotrovimab. So there are some protocols that are being formed to help prioritize those who are at highest risk for hospitalization and death, to help ensure that those are the people who get access to the Sotrovimab. But it is frustrating.
Yeah, and so the where would people even ask for it? Do they ask for it at their doctor's office? Do they call the hospital? Where would be the place to even seek it out?
Yeah, both of those places are fine. So if you find out you have COVID at an urgent care, talk to the provider there. You can call your primary care provider, or if you're sick enough to be in the hospital, then you talk to the provider there.
Okay. As far as going to the hospital, though, if you don't actually have a need to be there at the moment, I've heard certainly the hospital is trying to discourage people from just showing up if you're not an emergency case, for example.
Yeah, please don't use the emergency room just for the sake of getting tested for COVID. Really, we need to reserve those emergency room beds for those who are quite ill. If you're not sure if you're sick enough, then call and ask for help. We don't want you at home wondering if you're sick enough and then ending up so sick that you don't make it to the hospital. If you need to be there, please go, and they will take care of you. But if you're feeling well enough to still move around your house and breathe okay, and you're not having chest pain, and you're not feeling confused, and your face isn't turning blue, obviously that's a late sign, but please stay at home as much as you can. Call a provider, whether it's your primary care provider or an urgent care, and ask for guidance if you need it.
Let's move on and talk about testing, Dr. O'Keefe, because obviously there's going to be a lot more of this as people begin to get their free test kits from the federal government. And that website went live just last week to let people make those orders. So they should be arriving sometime soon. What's the advice on how and in what situations these should be used?
Yeah, so, for so long we've been asking people, please test. If you think you have COVID, absolutely you should test. And now we're in a situation where we're having to change that, and that's due to a lack of testing availability. So if you were just exposed yesterday and you're not having symptoms, please take precautions, but testing today is not going to be very useful. It's going to be too early. So wait 3 to 5 days after an exposure to test. If you have symptoms, we're finding that the antigen tests, which are the home tests, may not test positive for a day or two after symptoms start. So if you know you have symptoms, stay home. Don't go out. If you have to go out, please wear a high-level mask, a KN95, KF94, or N95, and then test on perhaps that second day of symptoms. And if you end up with a negative result, test again 24 to 48 hours later. And again, that's because these tests are not perfect. And so that initial negative result may not be completely reliable. On the other hand, if you get a positive result, that's very reliable. You don't need to retest. Anytime you get a positive result, you can assume that it is truly positive. In terms of returning to work, this has been rather confusing for some people because the guidelines from the CDC are a little bit wishy-washy on whether or not you need to test to return to work.
The whole 5 to 10 day thing?
Right. So if you have a fever, you cannot go back to work. Fever is the most reliable symptom we have to know that you are still contagious. If your symptoms are improving, you haven't had a fever for a full 24 hours, and you're not using medicines for control of fever, then if you have access to a test, go ahead and test. But otherwise, if you're not in a high-risk work environment like healthcare or a school or something like that, you don't necessarily have to test if you don't have access to testing. If you do have access to testing and you're trying to return to work, do not use a PCR test. These will stay positive in some people for weeks or even months. So that's not going to tell us if you're contagious. You really have to use one of these antigen tests, which are the ones that you get results very quickly and are the home tests. Those are antigen tests. So we're working on putting out some guidance that's available to the public. That's a lot of information and can be hard to follow. So we've just put that together over the weekend, and we'll try to get that up on the website.
Okay, but a couple things to keep in mind here. So basically, the testing 3 to 5 days after suspected exposure, so no less than 3 days.
Yeah, unless you have symptoms, mm-hmm. Then you might end up testing sooner because we know that the incubation period for Omicron is fairly short.
Okay, and then once you want to do a second test, that should be at a minimum of 24 more. It sounds like more, the sweet spot is more like 48 hours after that previous test.
Yeah, 24 to 48 hours later.
You mentioned a lag in positivity showing up with the antigen tests. What is that about?
Yeah, that's something we're still working on figuring out. And so it may be because Omicron replicates so quickly that there's a lag between when the test can detect it and when you actually start having symptoms. Or perhaps it's because so many people have been exposed to what the virus looks like previously. They're vaccinated or infected, and so that viral load just isn't as high, and the tests don't pick up on it as quickly because your body is able to fight it off better. Or maybe there's different variants of Omicron, and some of them make fewer antigens for the antigen test to pick up on. Regardless, I think, when you're trying to figure out if you have COVID or not and you need to use a test, you can use a PCR or an antigen test, but you may need to repeat it 24 to 48 hours later. If you're trying to decide if you're still infectious, don't use PCR testing. You need to use an antigen test. And we'll continue to look for studies to help guide us on why there's this delay in the test turning positive at the beginning of infection, and then that will give us a better idea of which test to use and when to use it at the beginning.
Dr. Leona O'Keefe back with us on the Jefferson Exchange for our weekly COVID Q&A. Dr. O'Keefe is Jackson County's Medical Director at Health and Human Services. And there's still time for you to get some questions in of your own at 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, email address jx@jeffnet.org. With the tests, positive or negative, I mean, how should people be dealing with the results? Should they be reporting them to somebody?
Yeah, it's no longer required for a report to come through to public health, but you certainly can call in, and it does help us have a better idea of what's going on in the community so that we know how to respond effectively and safely. But also by reporting it, you can have access to someone to answer your questions, some guidance on how to manage that positive test and help others who may have been exposed to you. And for some people, they may qualify for what are called wraparound services. If they need help with housing or food in order to quarantine and isolate, they can get connected to that. So there's now the statewide phone number that people can call for this. And that number is 866-917-8881. And you can call that Monday through Saturday, and receive guidance and help. And if you want to go through the entire process of reporting a survey online, you can do that, but you don't have to. So that help is still available to people.
Okay, let me repeat that again, because this is Oregon Health Authority. You can get it at covidblog.oregon.gov, and the number again is 866-917-8881, 866-917-8881. And as long as we're putting phone numbers out there, Bonnie in Medford was dropped off a question about saying there was supposed to be an 800 number for the COVID test from the federal government. She doesn't have the internet for the website. I got that number. It is 800-232-2000. 800-232-0233. So, Bonnie, let me give it again. 800-232-0233. And we'll put these up on our website for the people who have websites. I understand that obviously not all of us have internet access. And then also Bonnie wants to know, Dr. O'Keefe, if you have any idea which pharmacies will have the new shipments of N95 masks?
No, we haven't received those details yet. That is coming from the federal government. All we know is that those masks will be given to pharmacies and community health centers. So think of the FQHCs like La Clinica and Rowe Community Health. But I'm throwing their names out there, but actually we don't know where those masks will end up. I just would imagine those may be some of the places because those are our local community health centers. So we are, just like you, waiting to hear from the federal government where those will be shipped to.
I imagine staffing challenges make it interesting to try to call some places and get information too, because you may end up on permahold.
Yeah, I would wait until there is a press release, and that should come out in the papers and on the radio. And, of course, next week when I'm back here again, if we know any details, we will be sure to share them.
Okay. I have a question here, actually, that we had a couple of weeks ago, and I haven't answered it yet or asked it yet, but somebody wanted to know if we should wash our clothes if we've been sick, if that really has any effect on the situation.
Well, in terms of spread, there's not very strong evidence that COVID spreads through touch as much. You know, it really spreads through the air. Having said that, I know that many medical providers, if they're, you know, caring for COVID positive patients, they will come home and take their clothes off and shower before interacting with their family. I don't think that there's a whole lot of evidence to say that you have to do that, but I don't think that it hurts by any means.
Well, to the point then of surface contact, I mean, is it worth doing any further sanitizing? I mean, does Omicron even move differently from previous versions of COVID?
I haven't heard anything that Omicron acts differently on surfaces than previous variants. You know, I think that cleaning surfaces still definitely has a role. But what we've said is if you're in a place where there's limited time, we really want you to focus on air filtration, wearing a mask and distancing, and of course, vaccination. Those are the biggest things that we know play a role. But our same advice remains true that it's all about the different layers, and cleaning the surfaces remains one of the layers available to us to limit the spread.
To the idea that we're reaching a peak, from what you were saying about potentially being in Northern Oregon and then maybe even more still coming for Southern Oregon, do you take with a real grain of salt the idea that we're going to turn the corner soon? We've heard we had a lot of corners in this pandemic.
Yes, and if I was to make a prediction, I would probably be wrong. So I think if we've learned anything, it's that predicting COVID is quite challenging. I rely, just like the rest of the state, I rely a lot on Dr. Peter Graven and his forecasts for COVID.
He's at OHSU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can Google it and look up his numbers and things. But I do think we're going to hit a peak sometime in the next few weeks here in Southern Oregon. Now, that's a peak in cases. Obviously, then it takes a week or two to see the peak in hospitalizations and another week or two to see the peak in death. Mm-hmm. So there's always that kind of delay.
All right. We always have more to talk about and will for quite a while. Yeah. Dr. Leona O'Keefe, Jackson County's medical director. Thanks for joining us once again for COVID Q&A.
Thanks for having me.